Good morning and welcome to the KRFY Morning Show. This is Julie Calamine, your morning show host. And this morning I feel very lucky to be joined by two ladies who have been in the business of working in the outdoors for many, many years. They are Pat Hart and Pam On, and I'm going to introduce both in a second. But before I do that, I'd just like to talk about how we all got together and got this idea. So for those of you who don't listen regularly, you will come to learn that this morning show program is focused on the environment, recreation, and the outdoors. And it makes a good fit for these two ladies because that's pretty much what they've based their lives on. And so it's going to be a great opportunity to talk with them about how they've incorporated their lives into those three types of activities. We also do our best to keep these interviews local, and there's nothing more local than what we're about to talk about. Over the years, I've had the opportunity to get to know a lot of people through this radio program and through volunteering opportunities, and first got to know Pam through KRFY. She came in and told us about the work that she did up on the fire lookouts, and I'm sure many other things that she knew about. And Pat, I was able to meet through volunteer activities with Idaho Trails Association. Which volunteer project was it? And I just felt like these two ladies had things in common about their work histories and their zest for the outdoors and all the interesting things they've done. And additionally, on top, during one of my Idaho Trails Association trips, I learned about a shared experience that they had that they're going to share with us later. So I think it's going to be a great hour hearing from Pat Pam about life here in the Sandpoint, Bonner's Ferry, and the Panhandle, about how it's been to be a woman working in jobs that women didn't necessarily work in many, many years ago when they got going. So without further ado, I'll start by introducing you, Pam Onan. Hi, Pam.
Hi, Julie.
It's nice to see you again.
Thank you.
Pam is our fire tower person among many other things she's done. And then I'll say hello to you, Pat Hart. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Julie.
It's great to have you here. And Pat has been working with U.S. Forest Service for many, many years, but is more recently retired and doing more fun stuff. But I'm going to let you all start by telling us a little bit about yourselves. So, Pam, would you go ahead and tell us just as quickly, in your own time, in your own words, how you came to be here in the Sandpoint area and how you got into the work that you did and are still doing?
Well, even when I was a kid, I had to be outside, and I had to be in the woods and by the water, and just needed to do that. And then when I came west, it was about habitat for me and the mountains. I hadn't experienced mountains, and I wanted to learn how to ski before it was too late. And so I ended up in Sandpoint because of the habitat. And then when I found out there was a lookout job, I thought, well, that's for me. And it was pretty much it from then on out. So I've worked for the Idaho Department of Lands for, probably 3 decades now as a seasonal, working on Lookout Mountain in the Priest Lake Basin. And it's right on the crest of the Selkirks. And it's my spot. I really like going there. I feel very connected to place. I think I've always known that about myself, and that's been my place that I've gone. And I'm still working up there. I do other things. I work with Smokey Bear and get the kids to think about fire prevention. And I believe that it's really important for the kids and for anybody that has any kind of need or desire, or even if they don't, to get to know about it, to be outside and working or living and recreating or whatever they want to do in the outdoors, in the mountains, in the water. For me, it's a really necessary thing.
Yeah, I hear that. And what a great person for someone to run into that's up on the fire lookout. If you ever had anybody wander up, I bet you would be just the best person they could meet.
There have been some really interesting people show up during my time on Lookout Mountain. And since I'm actually not staffing Lookout because the cabin was condemned, and we're trying to get it back up, and we're working on that very hard. Now, I think there were some things that got in the way the past few years, but I actually go up on a Forest Service tower the past few years, and even though I'm a state employee, the Forest Service has me come on their tower, and I look at the state ground and look for fire. That's my job.
And you're still doing it, which is great. Very wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, Pat, you had another route to spending most of your working life in the outdoors. And tell us, first of all, how you came to be in Sandpoint, and then a little bit about the work you've done over the years.
Well, mine's a little different than that, because I'm basically from Chicago and Dallas. And so when I moved here, it was on a lark with a bunch of friends, and I was used to an academic world. And when I got here, I realized that you really couldn't find jobs all that easily. And I'm in Bonners Ferry. And so I remember going door to door, knocking on doors, trying to get jobs. And, you know, I worked in the hops fields and I worked in grocery stores and I sewed clothing for wealthy people. I did all sorts of things. But I remember trying to get a job at the Forest Service. And when you're not part of the Forest Service, you don't understand what they're saying. They kept saying things like, well, we only hire people we've hired before. And it just seemed like such a conundrum. I couldn't figure out how to get in. And one day I was talking to a friend that we played bridge with who worked at the Forest Service. And I said, how do I get a job? And he said, let me think about it. And then he said, come in, you know, on Monday. And so I did. And he indicated a guy over in the corner. He said, he'll hire a woman. Go talk to him. And I remember thinking, okay, what have I got to lose? And I went to talk to the guy. And sure enough, he said, sure, come to work next week. And I went, wow, that was so easy. And I showed up and I had told him I could do anything, but I was kind of scared that, you know, I could. And we were on a road crew first, and I was with a couple guys, and I kept thinking, whoa, this is pretty easy stuff that we're doing, and I couldn't quite figure it out. And the guy who was my boss picked me up, and we went around, and I remember saying, what exactly am I supposed to be doing? And he told me, and I went, wow, okay, there's a lot to do out here. And in the same conversation, I asked him why he hired me. And his response was that that women work really cheap. He grew up in the Okanagan. And he said they could always hire women and they were cheap. Wow. Okay, I'll take it, you know. And so that's how I got on. And then they put me with a crew, and they put me with an old guy named Rocky. And I know Rocky was very, very talented, and he had done a lot of different things. And I know that it was sort of like a downgrade for me to be his partner. You know? Oh. So I kept thinking, oh, man, I got to do everything right, you know. And Rocky had come up, and the first day we all went out in a rig, and we were going to plant trees. And Rocky, we got in, it was raining, we got back in the truck for lunch. And he swings around, and he looks at me, and he has this big meatloaf sandwich on white bread. And he starts wagging it at my face. And he goes, I got a daughter that can bake the best bread and can, you know, sew. And she's got a husband with a good job, and she still works. Why are you people like that? I just took a bite of my apple, and I said, well, Rocky, I said, I do all that before 8 o'clock in the morning. I'd get bored the rest of the day. And so we became partners at work, and he taught me ever so much. We became best friends, but it wasn't without a lot of effort on both our parts. We were very different people, but
yes,
and that's how I got started. He was the trail person.
So interesting, though, that he just didn't even understand why you would want to come to work.
Mm-mm. It was 50 years ago, so it's a little bit longer than three decades. And so he was great. He would like try to push my buttons, and I thought he was the funniest man I had ever seen in my life. And one day after we had worked a couple of months, he walked into the office, and he was carrying a broom, and he set it in the corner, and he says, by God, he said, I see your road to work this morning. All I could do was laugh. And it was after that when he realized he couldn't get my goat that, you know. On the other hand, I realized he was also kind of protecting me against, you know, a lot of other comments that came. I was like his personal mission or something. And so he was the trail crew guy. And I didn't grow up in an area where there were trails. But when my boss said, well, do you like trails? I went, oh, yeah, I love trails. And it was just a blink of fate that got me there. And now I do love trails.
Yes, and it's been a career of working on trails from some point on. And that's how I know you. Yeah. So, wow.
Completely.
And you found your way there.
Mm-hmm.
And Pam, how did you find your way onto the fire tower? How did they decide you were the person to do that?
Well, I can't speak for how they decide things, but I tell you,
none of us.
I remember going for my interview, and there was a table, and there were three guys in flannel plaid shirts and baseball hats across the table from me, and I had my chair over there, and I had my interview. And they had this list of questions. And I realized that most of the questions were about trying to ascertain whether or not the person who was going to be up there would be okay. I mean, like, okay by themselves and okay not, like, running off the mountain on the first thunderstorm or okay just not cracking up.
No.
And so I think I passed that test. I was pretty happy about that. And then the other part was I had to take a driving test. And as I'm taking this driving test, I'm thinking, this guy's nuts. He doesn't know that I can drive a car, you know. And you stop on the hill and it's, you know, you have to start with the clutch and stuff. And, I mean, I didn't worry about it. But how did he know that I wasn't going to end up in the ravine down there? But I got the job. It was sort of a funny story. The Forest Service had towers, and I thought I was going to get a Forest Service tower, but they were full. So they said, but the state might have a tower. So that's how I ended up on the state side. And we collaborate with the Forest Service. At least back in the day, we had six towers around the basin, and we call what we see, and we collaborate. And it was really, back in those days, it was really pretty fun because we had people on six peaks and communication and it was a lot easier to get a true location on a smoke if he had more than two sets of eyes on it or, you know, one set of eyes on it. I really liked it. And I knew I've always been okay by myself and okay camping or whatever you call it. But being on the mountaintop's really special for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you didn't wig out. You didn't run off the mountain.
No, but I've heard stories about people. And this one, I'll never forget this one lady. And I just described her to some other interview not that long ago, so I'm repeating myself, but it was really remarkable. She had hiked up with her husband and this other couple to the tower, and she wanted to come up on the tower. And lookout's only 25 feet, but it's steel, and you have to get up in the air, and there you are. And she was so terrified of that height. But, you know, she thought, she was so clear that she'd hiked to the top of this mountain. She really didn't want to not do the last 25 feet. And I said, well, come on, I'll help you, you know. And her husband, you should go, you know. I don't even remember her name, but she was lovely. And she starts climbing the tower, and she was so terrified, the entire tower shook because she was trembling so hard. I mean, that's a lot. She wasn't very big either. So she got up there and, you know, just things like that, seeing people be in a place where you can tell it's special for them too. And I love to be witness to that kind of stuff where people are like, wow, this is great. Or, you know, here I am. And let's do the last 25 feet. Okay. Okay, I'll try.
It's
she
neat.
Made it.
That's good.
That is great. Well, Pat, having only had volunteer experience on Idaho Trails Association projects, I've only seen you as camp cook, but you were, of course, a trail crew leader and worked on a lot of trails and had to have run into many, many people on the trails and worked with your crews all summer. And tell me a little bit about what that was like over the years.
Well, when I started, after Rocky retired, there really wasn't a budget for trails. And so I was allowed to actually, I was encouraged by our ranger at the time to come up with a volunteer program. And I can remember saying to him, God, but I'm really blue collar. What if I try and, you know, nobody comes? And he said, well, then you tried. And I was sure he was going to tell me that your job is over, you know.
You'll be fired.
Yeah. And so I tried everything that was legal in the Forest Service, volunteers and seniors crews and youth crews and, you know, anything that I thought could bring people to the district to do trail work. And it worked. And it just floored me, you know, that we had people all over the place. And the very first year we did that, we had 6 kids, young adults, who stayed for 10 weeks. And then we had all the other, like, volunteer vacations and Sierra Club and all the different groups come in on top of that. So I didn't have a crew at the time. There was just me. And so I used the 10-week volunteer crew as my crew to get everybody else up to speed to do trail work. And then it just became part of what I did. And every time the Forest Service would come up with some new way of getting people involved, whether it was some kind of an educational exchange or anything like that, I just liked it. And so what it did is it allowed me to meet an incredible number of people, and it kept me alive. And then I got to introduce them to the woods that were actually becoming my very favorite place to be. And so as a combination, it's Rocky gave me stories of his whole time, and he introduced me to people who knew the guys the mountains were named after. So I had that long, long history that came to me. And then I got to excite people about being there and knowing full well that they'd go off to wherever they lived. And they had this moment in time that they could have. And it was the same way of sharing that experience that you're talking about when people get there and they go, ah, only mine was generally a lot of work. And people would call me from far away and go, you know, I joined the Sierra Club trip on an in Colorado, and why didn't you tell me that they don't work? You know? I always thought, well, that's the crew. Here we go. You know, so,
that's right.
But you feel real good when you work real hard and you see beautiful places. And
yes, so, and make a way for other people to get in and look at it also.
Yep.
Pat, so was for most of your career, you didn't really have a Forest Service crew, it sounds like you were.
Oh, after I'd say somewhere in the 80s, we'd have like a couple of people.
Yes.
And, you know, there would be occasion, it seems like you'd maybe have one other person to work with, or sometimes two, but they never had a full season's job. So quite often I'd go borrow a couple guys from a survey crew or something like that. And so, but after that, we started getting grants. Once we had a good volunteer program, we could apply for state grants and those kinds of things. And then we actually had money to pay people who were permanent crew people and or seasonal crew people. And it built from that. And then pretty soon there was actually a budget. So I think the Forest Service, as over the years in the 80s and 90s and 2000s, it changed. And there's a higher emphasis on recreation and trails. And that's excellent.
Yeah, a recognition that it was needed.
That people want that.
Trails are disappearing.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, Pam, you were just kind of up in the tower watching things like this going on. Would you ever be able to see trail workers, people working on trails, or were you too distant?
Well, I worked really hard.
Yeah.
But I wasn't swinging a Pulaski or whatever you were swinging.
Yeah.
we had, actually, Lookout Mountain has an old trail. And it had been an observation point since the early 1909, I think is the year that they use. And it had been a place where they use for an observation point and starting to look out for fire. There was a cabin that went up there in 1929, which is still standing, which we are, well, we've bought paint for it, and hopefully that'll get on next, as soon as we can get there next season. But there's a trail, and that trail is a beautiful track. There has been quite a bit of timber harvest on that trail, so there would have to be some reestablishment of that track. I don't think it's impossible, though, and I'd really like to see that happen. So it'd be like 4 miles or maybe 4.5 from the bottom at Priest Lake near the Lionhead Campground, part of Idaho State Parks, up to the top of Lookout where the tower is and where the old cabin is. It's just beautiful country, and the view is perfect, and yeah. I think it's the best one, of course.
Worth reestablishing, and that is the job.
Oh, absolutely.
Of everybody. Everyone has to work on that, whether it's Forest Service or Idaho Trails or other volunteers. Yes, because when we lose them, we just lose them. Mm-hmm. It's difficult. Yeah, so that's when you'll have to send me an email. We'll see if we can get that on our list of a volunteer trail to work
on. Well, I'm kind of stirring the stew on that, and thank you for offering, because you were on my list for sure.
Okay, well, we'll see what we can. We can at least spread the word and see what happens about that. Well, we're both seasonal workers then, and so how was life working, doing what you loved in the summer, and then how did you make it through the winters?
Well, seasonal work worked for me because I didn't have a car that would go to town every day. so I was perfectly happy not to try to press my poor old Volkswagen into service. And it worked okay, because you just work like crazy and then save your money. And if you're not going anywhere in the winter, you don't spend a whole heck of a lot. And so it was fine for me.
Managed your budget, and it worked out. And then you had that peaceful time in the winter.
Yeah.
Which is very good. Yeah. And Pam, you too, did you work in the winter, or did you just do the fire tower work?
I worked at Schweitzer mostly.
You did? I did not know that.
On the mountain, yeah.
Yeah, so that's another outdoor job. How did that compare? I bet that was night and day from your summer work.
Well, not really, because I was skiing, so I'm out there.
Yeah.
Nice view. yeah, of course, it's different work and everything, but I love skiing. I mean, it was pretty fun. I mean, I get a couple months off in between times, and then firing it up in the spring again after Schweitzer closed, there'd be time to do a trip or something and then go back to work. And we couldn't get to the mountaintops, and that's still true until the snow's gone. So there's stuff to do below. And I schedule volunteers as well for Sundance Mountain, which is the other state tower in the Idaho State Forest. And that takes time, and I have prevention work to do. And I mean, I really do like my job and the stuff that is on my plate. It kind of evolved into my plate, I guess, but I'm still doing it.
Yeah, and it sounds like it is a unique job that not too many people would be able to say they have the combination that you've got. So you've sort of shaped your own work over the years.
Well, you'd have to ask my boss if he agrees with that, but I think probably, yeah, they're pretty, it's been a good place to work, my Priest-like office for the Idaho Department of Lands.
Yeah, a lot of, for both of you, a lot of time in the outdoors, a lot of time working with people you like, and seeing that a sense of fulfillment is what I'm hearing, that you feel like you're making a difference. Love it. Well, I think this might be a good time if any of you, we have a particular story we want to talk about, but this is a pretty serious one, so maybe I'll just give it to you guys, and I don't know who wants to start. Maybe you, Pat, and tell us how it all set up, but you two had a very interesting shared experience years ago.
Well, can I say, first of all, I had been on Lookout Mountain for years, and I'd listened to Hart on the radio, because when you call in the radio, which was our means of communication, you hear who's calling. Now I think we just use numbers. I'm not really sure, at least in fire. But I'd hear Hart, and I figured out that she worked at Bonner's Ferry because she was talking to that office. And being high, I can hear everybody. So that's the little part I wanted to say first mm-hmm. to give a little bit of a start with.
Yeah.
I had heard Heart on the radio for years.
And what kinds of things was she radioing? Like, what was it? I need more equipment? What kind of stuff went back and forth?
Usually just to check in, you know, just to let people know where you're okay, we're here, everything's fine. And it was a formality that we went through where you check in the morning and check in the evening and stuff like that. So, and yeah. Ironically, most people would say that I didn't use the radio often enough. But
well, they want to make sure you're okay.
Out there. So where this story starts is that it was one of the volunteer groups that we had, and we used to run. I used to camp probably 4 or more 10-day camps each summer, and they were generally all new people coming in. By this time I had a core of, you know, trail crew people and stuff. But typically the guys that were working on the trail crew were doing other projects, and I was taking the volunteer groups in. And so because I was meeting so many people, I would always take their list of people and kind of go over their names and figure out who they were on paper so that when I came through, I could, you know, I could meet them and remember their names more easily. So we were going, it wasn't a long walk at all. And the way I would work is I'd make sure the packer had everything that he needed. And then I would be sweep. And as I came by, people passed by them, I would introduce myself. And so I just started up the trail. We were maybe half a mile from the trail and up the trail. And a woman came racing down the hill and going, Pat, somebody has dropped. And I went, whoa. And she said, Dan, who is a dear friend, said, you'd know what to do. And in my head, I'm going, oh my God. And so, so I said, okay, who is it and who's there? She told me who was there, and I thought there were 2 nurses, my friend Dan and another really good friend who were very capable people, and they were giving this guy CPR. And I said, who is it that fell? And she gave me a name. And in my head, I went, oh, we'll call him John. John, that's 45 years old. He's got 2 kids, and his wife is with him. And, you know, and in my head, what I kept thinking is, okay, we can get him out of here. He's 45. It's going to be okay. And so I started calling on the radio, and I couldn't get Dan, and he was less than a half a mile up the trail. And I thought, wow, what's going on? And so then I started calling Bonner's, and I tried from several different places on the trail, and I put my pack down, and I ran down the trail to the trailhead. I thought maybe the radios that were in the cars were a lot stronger, and I thought maybe I can get them from there. And I ran down the trail and got in the car and started to call. And every once in a while, you'd hear something go, this is Bonner's. And I'd try to say something, and they'd go, Heart, you need to move. I can't hear you. And I thought, gosh, darn it. And so I called down to my packer. And I said, Brad, don't load up. Just bring an animal for a person. And he sounded startled, but he said, okay, I'll be right there. And then I got in the truck, and I started driving up and down the hill trying to find a place to get out. And by that time, I'm thinking, wow, how am I going to get this guy out? We can at least get Brad up there. Then if I have to drive him out, it's going to be 2 hours before we can get him to town. And what I wasn't understanding is how I could sort of get radio contact and then not get it. And all of a sudden, this very clear voice came over, and it was Pam. And she said, I got you. And it's true. She did. She saved me. And so she relayed all the information. And didn't you actually have to call Bonner's?
No, I think we didn't even have phones then.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't remember what year it was, but it was all radio. I had I was packing a Forest Service radio and a state radio.
Yeah.
And I don't remember frequency or anything like that, but radio transmitting is really location specific. And so Pat was trying to find a place, and I heard her, and I thought, and then Bonners was kind of getting back to her. I thought, well, you know, I can't just jump in because, you know, that's not my
job.
And then finally I could tell they're not talking. So that's when I just jumped in and I said, I can hear you. Go ahead. Yeah. And so I relayed radio from her radio to Bonners, and then seemed like it went on forever, and I just remember sitting there, night fell, and I thought, well, are they going to get a mass unit out of Fairchild? Are they going to get this guy out? Yeah. And so we're ready to figure all that stuff out. But I just remember feeling so into, like I was there with them, and I could see it because, I mean, we've all been in situations where somebody's gone down, and it's very tense, and you want to do the best you can, and you want to help, but they're in a location where it was hard, and she couldn't talk to anybody that she needed to talk to. So it was lucky I was there and able to relay, and I'll never forget that night. It was pretty tense.
And what had happened is the translators had gone down, and nobody knew that. Nobody in Bonners, nobody on the... So we're trying to hit these translators that... were not working. And so when I finally got word that, they were sending a doctor and they were sending the mortician on the way up the hill. And Brad was coming down. Brad was my packer. And he and my friend Dan and my other friend Jerry had loaded him up.
He didn't make it.
They did CPR on him for like 45 minutes.
Ugh.
And everybody was exhausted. And the doctor is the one who, coming up the hill, somehow I could hear him. And he said, stop CPR. And my heart just went to, you know, I wasn't even up there, but I just thought, oh my God. And so somehow I got Bonners, or there was some communication that said, stay where you are. And I went, oh, I can't do that. I cannot stay here and let that group come down. And so I raced back up to the trailhead, and I was going to walk up. And here comes Brad with the guy on a mule. And the person right after him was the guy I thought it was.
Oh.
And so I was so confused. And I went, oh, okay, it's not John and his family. It was a guy who was 79 years old, and they had him, and it's so awkward. You unload him, and we put him in the back of the truck because we weren't really sure what else to do. We had covered him up with, you know, his sleeping bag, basically. And then we were going to go down, and you're not supposed to move someone until the mortician gets there, or whoever it was, or the doctor. But I knew that guy, and he weighed 300 pounds. He wasn't going to make it up to where this guy was. And so I asked permission to bring him down, and that's what I did. And then we went down the road, not a mile, and the guy was coming up, and we transferred him into, you know, his ambulance and stuff, and left. And then we had to get the whole group out and start over again. And so we went back to town for a night, and just to make sure everybody was okay, you know. And and it was a huge experience. But I remember that hearing a voice. Oh, God, you don't really know. You're trying to be very systematic and do everything that you need to do, and you don't really understand how much emotion is inside you. And I went through that trip, and I went through another trip, and I had a couple of kind of bad dreams, but I thought, no, I'm doing this okay, you know. And there was an older lady on the second trip, and she took a wrong turn one day. And, oh, my God, I thought, you know, I'd lost her.
This is it
again.
Yeah.
Yes. And so I found her, you know, and It was a year later when I actually...
I think it was even more than that.
Yeah.
It was a while.
Yeah, because I...
And I just continued to hear you once in a while on the radio, but we never talked again.
And Pam came in with a friend who had introduced her to me, came back later that day and said, I don't know if you understand, I'm Pam, the one on the tower. I just started to sob. Oh. And I didn't realize that I had that much left in me, you know, that much emotion and stuff. And it was just really good to meet her.
Oh.
And it was a voice that, and I said this, that there wasn't a thing we could do to save Henry. Henry was dead the minute he dropped, but Pam saved me.
That's right. So,
and that's the truth.
It was, I'll never forget hearing that voice in that office. I was up there for some other work and in Bonner's, and I heard that voice and I went, I think I need to go talk to that person. I think I know that person.
Yeah.
And I just looked at you and I said, are you Pat Hart? And she goes, yeah. And I told her, who I was from Lookout. And we just stood up and gave each other a big hug and started crying.
Yes.
It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
She's my friend.
Well, you two really supported each other in a terrible situation. I can imagine that how unforgettable that would be. So what a great story. I've never experienced anything like that on a trail or in a suburb. And I just can't imagine what that must have been like. We as crew leaders for Idaho Trails Association have to go through our first aid and all of our training. Mm-hmm. And every time I get through with that training, it makes me think, why am I going out there and trying to be responsible for people where anything can happen? And so I have to applaud you, Pat, for years and years of just meeting up with people that could do anything terrible, and you never know what's going to happen with all those rank volunteers, and yet you just kept on doing it. Mm-hmm. Very impressive.
Yeah. Well, it's really a special time, and be glad that you get that CPR training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just don't ever pass up a chance to take that CPR training.
And I remember even when I first started, because, you know, I needed the job. So I told everybody I could, I can do that, you know, but I wasn't sure that I could. And I can remember a couple times looking at Rocky. This is way back when I first started and going, whoa, if anything happened, because radios weren't always good. And we didn't have things like satellite and cell phones and stuff like that. We had nothing. And there were times when it was just the two of you depended upon each other. And I can remember actually really looking inside and going, can I carry this man if I have to, you know? And because it really gets down to that. And I think that's why there was so much concern about, you know, who's actually working with you and stuff like that. Can they? I know that is true, that guys will look around and look at a woman that's half their weight and go, what are you going to do to help me?
You know? Right. Well, it's and so fair, there's some, fair question.
Yeah,
right?
It is a fair question. And and I think that I think we're closing in a lot of the gaps on some of that stuff. And I think certainly technology helps incredibly. I think at the time that I started it, you were on your own a lot. And for me, that was excellent. It made me be who I am, you know, but it, you know, as someone who would like to take care of other people, I'm really glad that there's technology now that allows you to call somewhere, you know.
Yes.
That makes a big difference.
And it doesn't have to fall upon you quite as heavily.
Not
you have the
quite.
Chance to seek out help if needed. Yeah. I can see that. Yeah. Well, that was kind of a low point and a high point both for you two. a very emotional and, you know, very wonderful experience. But there must have been some other times, too, that were both, that could be either funny or just terrible. Any other little short stories you might like to share?
Oh, I'm afraid I got more stories
than
we need to go.
Yeah, go for it. I'll think of one I can say.
But we got to get the names eliminated. So, but a lot of it, there's stories almost every day and almost every year. But I don't have any. I have some that changed me. And one was building a trail to Copper Falls. And it was a very short trail. People had just run in. And we didn't really have money for it. We had exactly $5,000. And so I was going to get Kid Cruise to do it. And it took more than just a single year for sure. But it was something that I hadn't chosen to do, but had come from our supervisor's office. And they said they wanted a handicap accessible trail. And so it is a trail that goes to an overlook of Copper Falls, and then it swings down and goes through a low-lying area as well. And I mean, the first time, I had never contracted anything out, so I didn't really know what you're supposed to do. And there was a wonderful contractor here in Sandpoint named Carl May who came up to bid on it. And we walked the location and stuff, and he kind of looked at me. He said, "Well," he says, "yeah, I think I could probably do it for $7,500. He had a little machine. And I didn't know any better. I looked at him and I said, "Well, I don't have that much money." And he said, "Well, how much money do you have?" And I told him $5,000. And he said, "Oh," and I looked at him again. I said, "I bet I wasn't supposed to say that to you, right?" He said, "No." He said, "But I'll do it for five." And so we made the contract where he put the base route in, and we had Kid Cruise, and we had the Lions Club built bridges across the creek a couple times, and Kid Cruise were in, and we put a lot of, with our first volunteer group was in there with a little hand pushed gravel thing, and I remember people from the Forest Service coming up and saying, "Why are you putting all this effort in this? You could just walk in, you know, it's right there, blah, blah, blah." And I said, "Well, you know, it's supposed to be handicap accessible. I don't know. I don't have an answer to that." And I came back that fall, and I was just going to do a quick check to see, you know, in my head, I wanted to be as far in the woods as possible. I didn't want to be right next to the road and building a trail to a waterfalls. But I thought, okay, well, I should see what I need to do for next year and stuff. And I came in, I was all by myself, and I was up the trail a little tiny bit, and I heard a van come in. And I looked down, and there were five or six young adults, two wheelchairs, one kid that had crutches, another young woman who was blind, and the person who drove them up there. And they were so excited. And they, you know, they were smelling everything, wheeling up the hill, "See, I can do this, blah, blah, blah." And the absolute joy changed me forever. And I went, okay, this, what Pam was talking about, this need to be outside, this is true for everyone. We all need to connect to the ground. And we need to have that experience. And it doesn't matter who you are. You need to be able to feel it. And so for me, it became a particular joy to get people out of cities and out of their environment and have them feel what the woods can do. And the woods heal you. And I know that for sure. And
yeah, what a great story. And we all have our own perspectives, and yep, everybody needs their experience in their own particular way. That's a great story. Well, we've had a good talk about what you all have done over the years, but you're not done. Pam, you're still out on the fire towers doing things, and I don't know what you do all winter, although I'm not far from your house right now. But do you just take it easy? Do you have other interests that keep you
going?
Well,
I have other projects, and I sort of keep going throughout the winter with Bonner County Fire Prevention and, well, scheduling volunteers for Sundance. And now this year, if we can get the resources and maybe volunteer time and commitments for the replacement of the lookout cabin on top of the tower, that'll be ongoing. And I'm really in for that. I think it's a really, really special place. Yeah. So there's that, and I don't know. It seems like time goes pretty fast. It'll be spring before we know it.
That's right. Absolutely right. And Pat, this connects a little bit because I know you have a keen interest in seeing that the buildings in the forest and other places don't disappear, the important ones. Tell us about your work there.
Yeah, I started a friends group. I think the only reason I retired is because I couldn't physically do the work anymore. And so I thought, well, how can I be helpful? And there were a lot of projects that we had started that were not done when I retired. And they involve a lot of the old cabins and lookouts and Snyder Guard Station, which is just a beautiful guard station on the Moye. And so I thought, well, maybe I could help by doing some of that. And so a very dear friend of mine said to me once, she said, yeah, old buildings are just old buildings unless you know their story. And so I think that's right. I think it's important because I know a lot of the stories and I don't want them to just become old buildings. And so our group is the Friends of Boundary County Historic Sites. And it's not just buildings, but it's places that are important and have a community feeling to them or have been used for years. And so we've specifically worked in the Boulder Creek area where the old town sites are and the old cemetery. And we work at Snyder Guard Station. We've created a kind of a museum, a Forest Service museum. We tie in occasionally with our local museum, but our spots are all outside and in the woods. We clean up West Fork Cabin and have done stuff up at Ruby Cabin. So it's a real special place, and we look for volunteers and, you know, folks that, and we try to go ahead and tell the story while we're doing it, you know, and it's a nice connection.
Yes, and then is there an interpretive element? Is there some kind of information for folks who might visit?
Yeah, I think that's in the works. There's a lot of it. The Snyder Guard Station is an interpretive site as well. It's in the rental program through the Forest Service, and they allow us to co-host a couple of open houses every year in the beginning, like in May and then again in September. So anybody can come and see the place. And so there are interpretive features on the site, and yet people can rent it all year long. And that's through the Forest Service. And the rest of them, if we develop some of the interpretive stuff, we've got a pretty good partnership with them. And so I think that allow that kind of feature.
It'd be nice for people just happening upon those places to be able to know a little bit about them.
Yeah.
Sounds great. Yeah. Well, ladies, the time has flown.
I have to say one thing. You do realize that Lookout Mountain is in Boundary County.
That's good to know.
Well, I'm thinking about that. Thank you.
Yes, that's right. So lots of cooperation we hope for anyway between these things that you both care about. Well, this time together has gone very quickly, and I've just loved hearing about your work that you've both done and the story that you shared and just your appreciation of the outdoors and the world you've been in. And, you guys were the beginners and the one of the very few women or ones of the very few women that had jobs like that in the past, and more have them now, but it's still not a balanced profession, is it? More guys in your profession than women. So you really struck out and made an impression, and for that we appreciate your work over the years. Yeah. Well, I'm going to wrap this up, and if you would like to have any last little ending comments, go for it. Otherwise, I'll just thank you for being here today.
Well, thank you for inviting me, and I've enjoyed talking and meeting and spending some time with Pat, especially since we do have this really special link, and I'm really grateful for that. Thank you.
Yeah, it's been so nice to have this talk today. Thank you. Well, listeners, this has been KRFY Morning Show, and if you didn't hear it earlier today, we were joined by Pat Hart and Pam Onan, Pam Smokey's helper up there on the fire tower, and Pat Hart, a kind of a lifer in the trail work world up in the county, up in Bonner and Boundary County, mostly Boundary.
Bonner's.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Okay. So ladies, I appreciate your time and keep on keeping on. Thank you.